Talking History's Eileen Dugan will provide you with the history of trash, our disposable society, planned obsolescence, and much more.
So what did you throw away today? Maybe you hauled those garbage cans to the curb this morning, or put your recyclables into neat green bins. You tossed out a candy wrapper, or the Ziploc bag from your sandwich. Or maybe you cleaned out the attic and donated what was still usable to charity, or had a yard sale. These days we part with things very easily, out of use, convenience, or a change in fashion. How have we come to view so many possessions as being so disposable? Joining us today to discuss American attitudes towards throwaways is Dr. Susan Strasser, professor of history at the University of Delaware. Dr. Strasser is the author of numerous books and articles on American daily life, including Never Done, A History of American Housework, Satisfaction Guaranteed, The Making of the American Mass Market, and the recent Waste and Want, A Social History of Trash. Welcome, Dr. Strasser.
I'm glad to be with you.
How did you get involved in the study of trash?
Well, as you mentioned, I wrote a book called Satisfaction Guaranteed, The Making of the American Mass Market. And while I was doing the research for that book, which essentially took much of the 1980s, there was a series of environmental, I guess I have to call them environmental events. The garbage barge roaming around American waterways looking for a place to dump stuff, Chernobyl, Bhopal, you know, things that, events that were bringing environmental issues to my mind in a much more daily kind of way and to those of most Americans, I think. And as I was doing, I mean, this was happening while I was doing this research on the introduction of new products, so it sort of went from one to the other. Actually, that book has an epilogue where I sort of imply that we ought to be thinking about the environmental effects of all this product introduction. And so when I started out to think about another book, it seemed like the next thing to do.
So from your researches, have you found that we've always been a disposable society?
No. In fact, what was most interesting to me, I think, was the extent to which I found that we had not been a disposable society in the past, that people used and reused nearly everything, both using things at home in their daily lives, and also that there was a form of what we would call recycling, although it wasn't called recycling at that time. You know, the word is really a 20th century word, but the very same peddlers and general stores who brought people the early manufactured goods also took away old things, old bones, rags, paper, rubber, metal, and were part of a process that brought those things back to factories to be used to make new materials.
New materials such as what?
Well, the main driving force of this system was rags being made into paper. Before wood pulp paper was, the process for wood pulp paper was invented in the 1870s, all paper really virtually was made from rags, linen rags and cotton rags especially. Wool and silk weren't very good for it, although a little bit of silk could be used. There was a tremendous shortage of rags. The rags were always in high demand. Money was paid for them. And, in fact, there was an international trade in rags, which was hard for me to believe.
And why did they switch over to wood pulp then?
Just that there was a huge demand for paper, and it was much, much cheaper. And it could, I mean, you could get wood pulp by going into a forest, chopping down the trees, and grinding them up, a much easier process than going house to house collecting rags.
And how do people recycle their clothing as well?
Well, there were many ways that clothing was reused and recycled. First of all, clothing was mended time and time again. When something had a hole in it, when it had a tear in it, when it was stained, people wore clothing with patches on it, even, you know, certainly not rich people. Well, actually, rich people did, too. I've seen examples of beautiful silk dresses in museums where you know, obviously there was a tear, there was a burn, and they're patched. I mean, not with crude patches such as we think when we think of patches, but they're redone. This was also true when fashion changed. Even quite wealthy women would have their clothes remade. In other words, new trimmings put on them, new buttons put on them, sometimes new fashion sleeves or collars or cuffs would be put on them instead of getting rid of the whole piece of clothing. Then, of course, old clothes were made into quilts, although one of the interesting things I discovered when I started doing the research was that many women who did quilting, as soon as they could possibly afford new material for quilts, they used it because, you know, they saw their quilts really as art projects. And if you want blue, then it's easier to get blue by going to the store and buying it. In addition to which, new material was likely to last longer than used material. And given the amount of work that a quilt takes, you know, they're good reasons to want to use new material and have the whole thing last longer. But rag rugs were a very common project. Braided rag rugs, hooked rag rugs, and woven rag rugs that clothing was made into. And then rags were also, of course, used for the same kinds of household projects that we tend to use paper towels and sponges for. So many rags got used in household work, and finally rags were recycled and made into paper.
You've mentioned the recyclable attitude of the period. So how did local governments begin to get involved into trash removal?
Well, big cities got involved in trash removal as part of a general movement towards public works improvement and public health improvement at the end of the 19th century. Water and sewers were sort of a more immediate need, and that tended to happen first. But garbage removal was kind of the next thing that a city, once it had made sure that its citizens had clean water and that there was a way of removing sewage, garbage removal was generally the next thing on the way towards cleaning up the rather filthy 19th century cities.
Well, actually, if people were recycling so much, why did they begin to amass garbage in the first place?
Well, there were certain things that we don't even think of because we don't have them anymore, like ashes. if you're heating with coal and wood, for example, you're going to have ashes. And there weren't really very many ways that individuals could reuse ashes, although when municipalities started collecting trash, they used ashes. They insisted that people separate their ashes out the same way we separate plastic bottles and aluminum cans out, and the cities were able to use the ashes for landfill for concrete. But, you know, that's the kind of trash that there really wasn't any way for individuals to reuse. The other thing was that as industrialization proceeded and mass production and mass distribution and just people started having more stuff over time, and as people started to have more stuff, they started to throw away more stuff.
And so you do link the advent of a consumer culture with the increase of trash?
Well, absolutely, and that's really the whole connection that my work is intended to try to uncover.
And how does that happen?
Well, there's not really an easy easy one, you know, one sentence answer to it. It's not a kind of straight cause and effect sort of thing, but you know, there's some pretty obvious connections between consumer culture and the development of the attitude of disposability. For one thing, the development of a whole range of literally disposable things, bottle caps, razor blades, paper cups, paper products in general. Secondly, the development of advertising materials. The Sears catalog, you know, there wasn't just one Sears catalog a year. There were five or six Sears catalogs a year, and they were all fat and, you know, produced I mean, they themselves became trash when the next catalog showed up. Marketing materials that went into stores, magazines and newspapers. So once wood pulp paper came in and paper became a cheaper thing, advertisers sort of took it over as, you know, a way to sell things. And so that's another kind of piece of it. Packaging is a piece of it, and the advent of branded, packaged consumer goods that meant that people were no longer taking a bottle or a bag to the store to have it refilled, but rather they were buying things in containers that came home for one time. The other big set of connections is a whole new set of attributes of products that the consumer culture promoted, and that likewise promoted a throwaway kind of attitude. I'm thinking of technological obsolescence, which, you know, we think of in terms of the computers that are starting to clutter our houses as we, you know, thought that paying $2,000 meant that we were getting something that we would save forever, but it turns out that a few years later, that computer doesn't work to do the things that we want it to do, and so then what do we do with it? So we think of technological obsolescence that way, but that same process happened in terms of lamps and radios at the beginning of the 20th century.
And later on in the century, avocado refrigerators and such,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And that business of color, I mean, that's another piece of the consumer culture. You know, the avocado refrigerator might work perfectly well, but if it looks like a, you know, indication that you're no longer with it, then it starts to be something that you want to throw out. Well, that's a process that, again, started at the beginning of the 20th century when things like towels, which formerly had always been white, started to be marketed in colors. And, you know, at first it was something that only very wealthy people had or that middle class people might have as part of their trousseaus. You know, this is something you would get as a wedding present, just beautiful towels in many colors. But the advertisements were saying you would want to be changing your towels with the season, or you would be wanting to remodel your bathroom to a different color and have towels that would match. And, you know, even though very few people were actually doing that, that was the mindset that was becoming set up at that point.
And so what do we do with our avocado refrigerators and the towels we don't like and the clothes that are out of fashion now? Do we sell them, give them away?
Well, as you were saying in your introduction, we have garage sales, and to some extent we give them to charity. And this is another piece of the puzzle that fascinated me as I was working on it, was sort of the role that what I call the salvage charities played, the Salvation Army, Goodwill, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, and then a lot of smaller charities too, that sort of contributed to the development of the consumer culture by giving people the attitude that it was okay to get rid of stuff if they would give it to charity, that, you know, that it could be indeed a moral act to get rid of things.
Now, 200 years from now, if scholars were to look at our garbage today, what do you think their impression of us would be?
Well, you know, I'm it's a hard question to answer. You know, certainly one of the pieces of my training and thinking of a historian as a historian is to think about the past and not
right.
the future. And the other piece of it that makes it difficult is that I don't know what their culture is going to be like 200 years from now. You know, are we going to have reached a point where it becomes clear that the planet can't sustain the level of disposability that American culture has and, you know, that is very much spreading around the world? I mean, I remember when people used to go to Europe and say, oh, everybody, you know, used string bags and there were no plastic bags. Well, now there are plenty of plastic bags
yes.
in Europe. But things, you know, people who go to the third world come back and report on how much things are reused and used and reused and reused in, you know, again, in places where the economy is less developed and where people value materials much more. You know, the question that I have in thinking about 200 years from now is whether this is going to go on, or whether in some way, whether it's a positive way or I fear possibly a negative one, it becomes clear that that level of consumption can't be sustained by everybody in the world.
All right, well, thank you very much, Dr. Strasser.
Well, it's been a great pleasure.
We have been talking with Dr. Susan Strasser, professor of history at the University of Delaware and author of Waste and Want, A Social History of Trash.